Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Robert Knott will not be with us today. I'm very happy now to welcome Lynn Walters. She is the Executive Director of Cooking with Kids, and Anna Farrier is the Community Liaison. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yeah.
So Cooking with Kids is a fantastic program that probably many of our listeners don't know about. You basically, well, why don't you tell us about it, Lynn? You're bringing good food and learning to understand food and to cook food into the schools.
Yes, we are. We are working with pre-kindergarten through sixth grade students in Santa Fe Public Schools, 12 Santa Fe Public Schools, teaching them about foods from different cultures around the world. And really, food is the heart of our program.
And so you basically let them learn to cook and prepare meals.
We do. We cook different foods. Like, for example, we just finished a unit where students were making fresh green and white fettuccine with tomato basil sauce and a salad. The green fettuccine has spinach in it, which everybody's sort of surprised at the beginning. Oh, are we going to like that or not? And it's so beautiful, and inevitably they like the spinach fettuccine the best at the end. Mm-hmm. That was one of our units. And then everyone has a taste at the end. It's not really prepared as a meal, but you know, they're meal components, and then we all sample the food together.
So this is part of the public school curriculum?
It is approved curriculum as optional curriculum for the Santa Fe Public Schools. It is aligned with New Mexico Department of Education standards, and in many areas, in language arts, math, science, social studies, wellness, and national health education standards.
That's amazing. I mean, food, if you think about it, really does cover all those things. Language arts, though, what's up with that?
Well, food is really a way of communicating, as well as we have written curriculum that describes where food comes from that we're going to cook that day, some nutrition information, information about growing food, using foods in different ways. So it really involves literacy. There are also writing activities. And in fact, we last year had an essay contest for the first time, which a number of teachers were excited about as a language arts exercise. Mm-hmm. Different types of text.
And also don't forget, reading a recipe. You need, in order to cook, you need to read a recipe.
Exactly.
And so it's practical, hands-on, you know, literacy work. So if you're not reading it properly, the recipe's not going to turn out. So it's a fun way for kids who may not want to sit and read paragraphs, but, you know, they're reading the instructions in the recipe. So,
and it's very practical. I mean, sometimes, I suppose, for at least some students, what you learn in school doesn't seem to be very relevant, and therefore
right.
it gets boring pretty quickly.
Right.
Well, there's lots of action. Mm-hmm. As Anna was pointing out, reading the recipe is the basic form of language arts, which also then provides opportunities for math, learning math skills. For example, many students have difficulty with fractions. But when you've got a piece of dough and you're dividing it into eight pieces, you can see what is a half exactly. You can make those connections from concrete to abstract.
Yeah, and you can, I suppose, with, well, one of the things that I've always found fascinating is that in American cooking, you use a cup of flour, which is a volume, and in German cooking, you use a weight.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
So learning weights and measures.
Exactly. I mean, weights are much more exact, but and you don't need to measure at all, really, if you learn principles of cooking.
So this is what you teach these young people, and nutrition is part of it as well.
Right, and for kids who, you know, you can talk and talk and talk about how you should eat this food or that food, and this food's good for you because it has vitamin A and vitamin C and vitamin D, and this is good for your skin, and for most little kids, it's just blah, 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 blah. You know, it's boring for them, but when they actually get to, you know, cut up an orange or taste different kinds of pears or lettuce, you know, different kinds of lettuces and things like that, it becomes real. And they, you know, when they have a dark green vegetable, and, oh, so this is vitamin A, this is, you know, or an orange and purple carrot, or just different things, it makes it real. And what we've, one of the things that in the world of nutrition education, so much of it is not about real food, and which in so many levels does not make sense, but it's just the way it is. So
what do you mean by that?
What I was just describing, you read about, know, different, you know, there's no application to a real apple or a real piece of lettuce.
Research has really revealed that knowledge does not necessarily translate into behavior. And certainly in the area of eating behavior, we found, I mean, years ago, as I'm sure many people listening will confirm, that children know that they're supposed to eat vegetables and they're not supposed to eat candy bars all day long. They know that. We don't have to tell them. I mean, the public education has actually gotten those messages across. Mm-hmm. But preferences for healthy foods is something that we're really have not been so good at, especially as the food system has changed to have a lot of high fat, high salt foods that really stimulate our palates, but don't leave room for kind of the real fresh flavors.
So you're helping kids to develop a taste for fresh vegetables and fruits.
Well said, yes.
Yeah. And one of the things that I find so interesting is, so Lynn, 15, 16 years ago, this program was started. And the reason it started was because Lynn had children in public schools, and she was a restaurateur at that point. And people were coming to her saying, help us fix this. You know, we would like to see some change in the cafeterias. Help us, help us. So
because the cafeteria food traditionally in almost any public school in the country has been atrocious.
Well, it's a perfect reflection of what we've done to our food system. Mm-hmm. Years and years ago, I mean, school food has not been tremendously funded. Mm-hmm. But when the school food program began, when it was found that men were undernourished and not able to qualify for service about 60 years ago, maybe 65 years ago now. That's when the child nutrition program began. And then our food system has changed over time, but the women in cafeterias used to cook.
Right.
And that has really changed as our food system has changed. Mm-hmm. One thing I would like to see, if I can just jump in with my wish, I would like for the women or people who cook food for our children to have the status of chefs, of high-end chefs, and be properly paid and adored. If we really look at our values and thinking about the world that we want our children to live in, the world of the future, if we don't put that into practice, then we're really missing such an opportunity.
You've got a great model in Chef on South Park.
Yeah. I don't know that, actually. I have to confess. I'll have to check it out.
Oh, funny. Well, let me finish the story I was saying. So Lynn, in a rather naive point, said, let's get some chefs together, and we'll cook some really great, healthy, yummy foods for kids in the school cafeterias. And so she was joined by a few other chefs, and they went into the school cafeterias and made these really yummy, delicious, healthy, fresh foods, and the kids wouldn't eat them.
They wouldn't eat it?
No. So
fresh green beans, blanched fresh green beans.
They just went straight into the trash.
But
so it's not just about what's prepared in the cafeteria. It's about what kids are willing to try and what they're used to eating from what they eat at home. And it became rather readily apparent that, you know, it's a bigger problem than just what's being prepared in the cafeteria. And that led to some research and realizing that, you know, kids aren't going to try something new if they've never seen it before, if they're not used to eating it, that sort of thing. And cooking with kids sort of sprang up from that experience.
Yes, it was really based on food acceptance research that came my way a few months after that experiment that failed. And really made sense. As a parent, as a human being, we're interested in things that we participate in. Mm-hmm. And children especially are so curious and excited about their world. And if they get to actually do something, make something, they're interested. And we also, along with that philosophy, the fact that they don't have to eat it is an important component as well. So it's really looking about or looking at choice, at looking at their participation, but then their choice to eat it or not. Because for many children, you know, their parents in well-meaning ways have coerced them. Just try a little. Just have some for me. Just try some for your grandma. And if we can take that pressure away, children will naturally, I think, develop healthy preferences.
So do you find that there are some kids who, after you make this whole meal with, well, let's see, some of the things that looked so good, black bean tostadas with salsa fresca, stovetop pizza with tricolor salad, do you find that there are kids who say, no, I don't want to try that? Or do they all try it?
Pretty much, there's a few who will just, you know, on principle, they just don't want to go there. They don't want to try it. It's, you know, for example, on the pizza, we use fresh tomatoes. So for a lot of little kids, they're just, they don't even want to, you know, they have fun making it. But then when it comes to the tasting time, you know, there's a few that just won't do it. But it's fun to watch because, again, we're not, when you try and force a kid, you'll get that knee jerk, you know, nope, not going to do it. And it becomes this sort of this power struggle. So we don't do that. We just step back. You can try it if you want. You know, it's okay if you don't want to. That's fine, too. But what ends up happening is there's sort of this subtle positive peer pressure. Like other little kids are like, wow, I didn't think I would like this. And so slowly this little kid that was just so determined not to try something will, like, you know, kind of sneakily look around and take a little nibble, and pretty soon you'll see their eyes light up. It's just so cool, you know, mm-hmm. to and if they hadn't participated in the making of it, there would be no way they would want to mm-hmm. try that. So,
and so you use an international repertoire of food.
Mm-hmm.
How do you choose the food that you teach them?
Well, Jane Stacy, who's our program director, and I both have restaurant backgrounds, food backgrounds. Jane was a caterer as well. And so we kind of just make up the recipes. And looking at different parts of the world, things that will work on a two-burner hot plate and a griddle in the classroom and will work in the cafeteria with very different equipment and limitations. And we adapt our recipes also that are cooked in the classroom to be served in the cafeteria as school lunches, which happens about twice a month.
And so have we progressed? In other words, when you serve healthy, nutritious food to school in school lunchrooms, are the kids eating it instead of throwing it away?
It varies. But I think, I mean, we've also been fortunate, I think, to develop a wonderful relationship with Santa Fe Public Schools. They've been very supportive of Cooking with Kids. Bobby Gutierrez who's our superintendent now, she was principal at one of our original schools. She helped me learn to write grants, used mm-hmm. to make my schedules for me before I could use a computer. And I think with the relationship with her and other principals and the food service over time, we've really, I think, worked together to provide some training that's hands-on as well for the cafeteria staffs. Try to understand the world that has many limitations of school food and how we can best partner and fit into that. For example, I think the salads, due to our combined efforts, salads in Santa Fe Public Schools have improved immensely. They use romaine lettuce, some locally grown lettuces, sunflower sprouts that are locally grown, which many children now in Santa Fe really enjoy their nutty flavor. So I guess the qualified answer is yes to some degree, but this still is the funding for school meals is so low. It's a maximum of around $2.70 per lunch, including food, labor, everything.
Well, and as we know, in order to get calories cheaply inserted into a human being, it actually is more efficient to use unhealthy foods, to use high-fat foods and not use fresh vegetables.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mention farm to school.
Oh, yes. We also, well, we buy as much locally grown produce as we can for our cooking and fruit and vegetable tasting classes, which maybe we can describe here in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But we've long purchased from local apple growers, greens growers. We created a root vegetable tasting, and Matt Romero grew purple carrots for us, as well as delicious orange carrots.
I have to admit, I've never heard of or seen purple carrots.
They're beautiful.
They were originally purple. Yeah,
carrots.
Yeah, they were.
Yeah. This is a fun little aside. We were on this little bit of a mission that failed. We thought
we like to learn from our failures.
When we did the purple carrot, we did a root vegetable tasting, and one of the vegetables that kids were tasting were purple carrots. So Matt grew us, what, like 5,000 purple carrots or something?
Not quite that many, but
it was
a lot.
Exactly. Every kid who, what is it, over 4,000 kids in Santa Fe Public Schools tasted a purple carrot, and we thought, that's got to be a world record. In one day, this many kids eating a purple carrot. So we started researching it and realized, oh my, this is kind of a big deal to pull
Anna
off.
And I wanted to put it into the Guinness Book of World Records.
I just thought it would be so funny. The kids would get such a kick out of it, but it's kind of a big production to pull something like that off. But still, I think it was a world record, even though it's not documented.
Well, you have done a wonderful job in getting the word out about what you do. You've been written up in the Journal of something I didn't even never heard of, but Journal of Nutrition, Education, and Behavior, and a number of other places. So, and you're in 12 different schools. You serve thousands of students. It's not just a little experimental program. It's something that's actually affecting. Well, let me ask you. I mean, do you think it does have an effect in terms of changing people's eating patterns and then rippling back into the families of the students who are doing Cooking with Kids?
We do have a lot of family members who participate. Each year, for the last several years that we've been really tracking it carefully, we have over 1,000 parents or grandparents who volunteer in our cooking classes. And they, some come only once, some come 5 times a year. So their participation varies, but that kind of involvement certainly creates more interest. We have had wonderful experiences where, for example, I ran into a girl who was 19 a couple of summers ago who had been one of my students, and she recognized me and came up to me and remembered several of the things that we had cooked. She told me she had had kind of a hard time and had dropped out of school and went back and got her GED and was doing well. But she said cooking was something that was this really important part of her life. And she was learning about Thai food then, and, you know, she had this wide interest. Now, I don't know that, as we were talking earlier about research a little bit, I don't know that we can claim results. Mm-hmm. We can claim credit for all of that. But the fact that she remembered it in a positive way from her elementary school experience was telling. We also recently, one of our food educators was shopping in a grocery store in town and saw a mom and her daughter with the recipe for Ethiopian lentils.
Nice. That you had given them in class.
That we had given them. And the mom had not been able to volunteer, but the daughter had come home and said, this was so wonderful, and we need to cook this at home. Actually, it was East Indian lentils, I believe, not Ethiopian. And we've done that, too. And so they were there shopping with the home recipe, finding the food to cook it at home. And so those kinds of things, as well as lots of comments that we get from parents and teachers and students, really lead us to feel like, yes, this is making a difference. Yeah. It's not, you know, it's a small, perhaps positive drop in the bucket, but it is something positive. That's the feedback that we get.
Absolutely.
We're talking to Lynn Walters and Anna Farrier from Cooking with Kids. What is an actual cooking class like?
The classes are 2 hours long, and we work with kids ages, you know, 4 to 5 up to sixth graders, so what is it, like 12 years old. And a typical cooking class begins with the food, you know, the Cooking with Kids instructor, the food educator, meeting with one classroom. So say it's Mrs., you know, Smith's fourth graders. So the first 15, 20 minutes of the class are spent talking about what this food is that we're cooking, you know, holding up a piece of spinach and, you know, who knows what this is, or showing all the different foods, because a lot of kids just don't get that experience at home. Understanding where foods come from, you know, an egg comes from a chicken. You know, I truly had a kid once who did not know that.
And many children, when you hold up parsley, broccoli.
Yeah.
Because many children really don't see vegetables very much.
And I know there are some kids who have thought that vegetables come from cans.
Yes. Or food generally comes from refrigerators.
Yeah. So we get to spend a little show and tell thing. We talk about, Lynn was just mentioned East Indian lentils. So we talk about India and what kids in India eat. And food is just this wonderful unifying, you know, factor. Kids can identify with children elsewhere. We both like to eat this food. And, you know, the food, some of the spices that are used in Indian cooking are similar to the spices that we use here. So,
or chapatis. Chapatis are really very similar to tortillas.
So you're fostering world peace along with everything else.
We hope so.
It's amazing what the bridges that can build. So, you know, we talk about food safety, you know, and being careful with the hot things and how to hold a knife properly. We teach children good, you know, proper knife skills, things like that. So that's really empowering for a 10 or 12-year-old to learn how to use a knife the way a chef uses a knife and how not to hurt themselves. Kids just, when they're taught respect and proper use, we are so lucky. We're not lucky. It's by design. No one ever hurts themselves. You know, we've never had anybody cut themselves badly or burn themselves, anything like that, because we teach them respect. So that, you know, that part of the class takes about 15 or 20 minutes. Then we launch right into the cooking. And the kids are split into groups, and each group prepares some portion of the end product. And that's about an hour or so. They do everything. The adults that are there helping them are just overseeing, kind of making sure that everybody gets a turn, that sort of thing. We cook, and then we clean up. The kids clean up they wash their own dishes, they clean up everything. And then while the last bit of the food is cooking, for example, we just finished the spinach and fettuccine. And, you know, the spinach or the fettuccine needs to cook, and the sauce needs to be cooked, so that takes a bit of time. While that's happening, the kids are working in their food journals, which are little information books with workbook activities for the kids to work on. So I'll go back to the fettuccine again. There's maps of Italy. There's, and it's all geared to the age. So the first graders and kindergartners are learning that Italy is shaped like a boot. And, you know, the third graders are learning that Italy is peninsula. You know, those sorts of things.
And then everyone sits down to eat.
Yes.
And we listen to music from the region of the world. We say something in the language of where the food came from.
Buon appetito.
Yes.
Yes,
yes, we do. Exactly. You'll have to come.
And we eat, and that's the culmination of the class. That's what everybody's gunning for, you know.
As one little boy said, we get to cook the food, and then we get to eat it.
And it's, even if the rare child that just does not even want to try the food, it's still a wonderful experience for them. Even if they're not eating the food, they're having so much fun doing something hands-on, because that is so woefully absent from schools these days. There's not a whole lot of hands-on activity anymore. And we all know how things have evolved in the classroom. It's just unfortunate, but this is such
many pressures.
Yes, and this is such a unique program that the kids actually get to do something, and it's fun.
Well, I mean, as everybody knows, either from watching their kids or from remembering being a kid, sitting in a chair when you're 7, 8, 9, 10 years old for any extended period of time, unless you're not feeling well, mm-hmm. is really no fun at all. It's not even fun then. But being able to get up and do things hands-on. And, of course, when you're doing something, you develop muscle memories and visual memories and things like that that stay with you really forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And what this happens often. Well, there'll be a child in a classroom who maybe, you know, has a really difficult time with the academic, you know, whatever it is. That they're having a really hard time with math. Or they're just not an especially successful student. But they get into a Cooking with Kids class, and they just shine, and it's just so exciting to see a little kid who's had a really hard time. And you hear this from the teacher, oh my gosh, you know, this kid has learning problems or whatever. But then you put them with a whisk and a measuring cup, and they do really, really well. And it gives kids like that a chance to really shine. And those sorts of experiences, it doesn't have to be just cooking. I mean, these could be in other hands-on experiences, but kids learn in different ways. And we're allowing children who maybe don't learn by sitting and reading to excel.
To learn by doing.
Yeah, and it can be so empowering. So the, you know, the ripple effects aren't necessarily about good nutrition and hopefully changing eating habits. It's, you know, maybe giving a kid a chance to succeed in another way.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about the program called Cooking with Kids. One of the things that has bothered me for a long time is the association of good nutritious food with a kind of class elitism. Mm. So people will thumb their nose at arugula salad or something like that. And, you know, with some reason, namely that restaurants where you can buy that kind of stuff often are, or sometimes are, considerably more expensive, whereas you can get a whole entire meal for $1.50 at McDonald's or whatever. But there is this other side of it, which is that it doesn't have to be that way at all. Some of these things you can grow in your yard.
Many of these things you can grow in your yard. And thinking about foods that now have elite status, you know, came from traditional foods that grew in different parts of the world.
Italian peasants.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And here, for example, quelites or lamb's quarters are something that grow as weeds. But people mostly weed them out. Or now and then you can find them at the farmer's market, but somebody's gone to the trouble to keep them growing and pick them and bunch them and then sell them. They're still not that expensive, $2 for a really big bunch. But you have to know what to do with it. And if you are using fresh food, I mean, we certainly have incentivized buying the cheaper way to get your calories, as you pointed out earlier. But
we, meaning?
We as a culture, as a world, as corporate
The
supporters.
Corporate, what do they call it? The food industrial complex.
Yes, mm-hmm. exactly. But, and the thing about fresh, I mean, that is one aspect that we can't overlook. But the other part of it is, if you do buy fresh fruits and vegetables, you have to take care of it. You have to take care of that food. And
you can't leave it in the fridge for 2 weeks.
No, you can't. And you also need to know what to do with it. And I think that's one of the issues that we have, you know, through the women's movement in combination with building this food industrial complex, we've taken that out as a way of, you know, taking care of yourself in a joyful manner. There's a great deal of either cooking is drudgery or cooking as fun is very elitist. And so what is it that we can do on a daily basis to take care of ourselves that doesn't take all day, but that can create delicious and nutritious, life-giving, enjoyable meals for our families?
One of the things that we try and obviously be really sensitive to is the foods that we cook with the kids are all affordable ingredients. And so, you know, trying to break down some of those mental barriers about, well, this is frou-frou food, or this is, you know, I couldn't afford this. So that...
Yeah, and especially some of the vegetarian food. I mean, if you're talking about black bean tostadas with salsa, that's the working class food of, well, certainly Mexico and Point South. I imagine that programs like this, although it might be a little hard to measure, would contribute to fighting childhood and then later adult obesity.
It's now seen in that way. And in the context of the whole obesity crisis, with people really looking for answers, we're a piece, I think, of the solution. We're not the whole answer, because it does involve so many factors. But what we learned when we were beginning was, as we talked earlier about knowledge, that children do have a certain amount of knowledge about what they should or shouldn't eat, as do adults. But in terms of preferences for healthy foods, learning to like foods that are good for you and not thinking, even as I say it, it sounds kind of terrible. Because it's like, if we think about delicious and joyful and yummy and those kinds of words, many people really don't think about vegetables. People think of like vegetables.
I have to eat my vegetables.
Right. And it's, I mean, I don't feel that way, but we're trying to convey that through experience to children and families and teachers too, who participate with us, so that that attitude can really shift. Because if we have this idea that things that are good for us don't taste good, and things that are bad for us are the things that we want, what does that say about how we really view our bodies or our intelligence?
Well, and I think people have this idea that kids just like what they like. And there is obviously some hardwired taste for sweets and for fats and so on for survival reasons. But the fact is that some huge percentage of our taste is formed through experience.
Definitely. One of the best things anyone can do, I think, if you have toddlers, is plant peas. Plant sugar snap peas. Plant English peas. Plant a few peas or a lot of peas. And
can you plant them inside? Can you get them in a pot? They have to be outside.
They really need to be outside, but you can plant them now. Now is a good time to be planting peas. And in fact, when my daughter was in elementary school, we did it when they were toddlers because we had big gardens. And the kids loved going out and picking and eating the peas. But then when she was in elementary school, one summer she was going to a summer art program, and a little girl who was in the same program used to come home with her after school. And the first time she came over, I said, why don't you go out in the garden and pick some peas? Because they were ready. And this little girl was very suspicious. And they went out and they picked some sugar snap peas. And it was this revelation. And then every day after, she just immediately wanted to go out into the garden. Can we go have some peas now? And that kind of experience, I think there's just no substitute for.
I have a story that I just thought of.
Telling stories for days and years here on your show now, Mary Charlotte.
the sweet fat thing and how kids are, you know, we think that they prefer that. So I was doing a cooking class, and we were in the middle of, you know, maybe it was lentils or I can't remember exactly what it was that we were preparing, but one of our Cooking with Kids classes. And this mom came in about halfway through with, you know, it was her daughter's birthday. And she brought in this big tray of store-bought cupcakes, the kinds with like the big kind of
poofy, yucky
neon-colored frosting. And I'm thinking, oh, great. You know, how's this going to go? You know, we have to incorporate these. You know, I couldn't just ask her to leave. So we were incorporating this birthday celebration into Cooking with Kids class. And the mom was pretty insistent that we were going to serve these cupcakes with the Cooking with Kids food. And I'm thinking, well, this is going to be really interesting to watch and see what happens here, because part of me was going, oh, no, they're going to go for the cupcakes. And they didn't. It was so amazing for me to watch. They wanted to eat the food that they had made. And it was, you know, so it was sort of like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other. But they were, it was really wonderful to see. They were given the option. They all knew, and they had limited time because the class was running, you know, we only had so much time. They couldn't sit there forever. And so most of the kids, all of the kids ate their salad and their lentils. And then maybe later they'd nibble on the cupcake.
They'd have a little dessert.
So that, I think you just give kids the chance and they will, you know, rise to the occasion.
Well, and there have been experiments where they give very small children a range of foods. And if you don't, you know, bombard them with TV ads and a lack of choices, they'll actually eat a balanced, healthy diet.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, Cooking with Kids, you have partnerships with chefs in town, with farmers near Santa Fe, is that correct?
Yes. We've, as I said earlier, we've always purchased food from local farmers when it's available. And in fact, we worked with the New Mexico Department of Agriculture and the school district about 10 years ago now to start a farm-to-school program in Santa Fe Public Schools. And with other nonprofits, we've done that. But then we've also, at various times, had farmers come into the classroom and present what they grow, how they grow it, what is it to be a farmer, really to explain that and sometimes show children foods, bring foods that they've grown. We have one farmer who brings beets and carrots and makes juice. And it's amazing to see how interested those children are and want to drink more and more juice. They're really excited. And then Anna started a program working with chefs in town. Do you want to describe that?
Yeah, that was about maybe around a couple of years into it. We just through, you know, the food world in Santa Fe is small, and conversations with some local chefs who were interested in coming and volunteering in the classroom, and it sort of evolved into this program now where we have probably 15 chefs that we call it the Super Chefs program. And these guys and gals volunteer their time and come into the classroom, and they're kind of like the guest star. You know, they come into the classroom and work with the kids and talk about what it's like to be a professional, to work in a kitchen or work in a restaurant. Or we had Marianne Deary, who is the chef at the Governor's Mansion, recently visit a class, and that was really neat for the kids to hear about that. And it's again, it's just another
community connection.
Yeah,
really.
And it's in what is so inspiring to me about this is this is bringing together parts of the community that maybe would never get to see each other. You know, a lot of the kids that we're working with, you know, their families are really struggling. It's you know, so they may never in their life get to step foot in one of these restaurants where these chefs are from, or you know, they maybe watch the Food Network, but so we have these chefs come who, you know, what we were talking about earlier, this elitist thing that can happen with food. So we have these high-end chefs and these little kids and their parents, and everybody's working together and everybody's really happy. It's just a model
of community-based education. I mean, it's really amazing.
Well, and as I said, we have this huge amount of parents and grandparents who volunteer, but that was not part of our plan. Mm. I suppose the positive part of growing organically, really, as our program has, is that there are some amazing unintended consequences. And if you're open to learning about them, then you've got the opportunity to extend those benefits. The downside can be, are we getting from A to Z? You know, in the way that we want to.
So what's Z?
Oh, Z is where the world is just beautiful and wonderful, and everyone has enough to eat of really delicious
food. And we all join hands.
And we all join hands and are good dancers, and everyone is happy, I think.
The thing that I find so encouraging and inspiring just being this program that we have here in Santa Fe. Santa Fe is an amazing town. We've had, you know, we have chefs helping us. We have farmers. We have local businesses that support us. Whole Foods, La Montanita, our big
Trader Joe's.
Trader Joe's. They give us food. We have local foundations that help fund us. Santa Fe Wine and Chili Fiesta gives us money. We have just, it's just, I think everybody realizes that this is a very important thing. And I think Santa Fe is unique that we all, you know, we're all sort of a like mind on.
Well, I think it's starting to be just more recognized. Mm-hmm. And the part of food that contributes to health certainly then provides the opportunity for children to utilize their innate intelligence to become, you know, to take advantage of the potential that is in each of us. And I think that's really important when we look at how society, you know, people who don't have very much, people who have a lot, you know, what does that really mean? And why is it that we don't really believe that everybody is as important, you know, that I'm as important as you are? Or,
yeah, that this kid of poor parents is as good as and important as the kid of rich parents.
Exactly. And so, as Anna was saying earlier, food is a wonderful connector. It's a way for people to share so many things. And even when we do our fruit and vegetable tastings, which are kind of our sustainability component, we provide the curriculum and food for those classes, but they're very simple, where children taste four kinds of apples or four types of salad greens.
So these aren't cooking classes.
These are tasting classes. And so since we're not teaching them, that's a less costly type of class. But those classes, for example, you mentioned world peace. And for example, if you're looking at four apples that are slightly different shape, different color, and if Anna's my best friend, but she really likes pippin apples, and I only want to eat Red Delicious apples, we can still be best friends. We can be different. She's got blonde hair. I don't. And you can really look at the benefits, I think, of the diversity that is in our world, in food, in people. It's another way to just kind of enjoy the variety in the world.
And you don't probably even have to verbalize it like that and shove it down their throats.
No.
They kind of get it doing it.
Yes. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about cooking with kids. One thing that I found interesting, I've been reading some of Michael Pollan's stuff, and he's famous for having written The Omnivore's Dilemma and a number of other books. And one of the things he said is Americans are obsessed with nutrition, but they have such terrible nutrition. And one of the reasons for that is that they think of nutrients individually rather than thinking of whole foods. And he said, you've got to stop thinking of a fruit as a delivery system for vitamin C, or, you know, it may be that some vitamin or some nutrient isn't even absorbable if it's not eaten within the context of the whole apple or the whole whatever that food is.
Well, traditional cuisines really made sense. Eating the food that is in season, foods that grow well together, those foods, it's really interesting. They often taste really wonderful together. They just marry well when you cook them. You can have, you know, new potatoes and peas and carrots are delicious. But we've gotten so far away from that. And then we had the whole technological revolution of understanding or looking at nutrition under a microscope and deciding that, oh, yes, we can identify and assess what all of these things do. But sometimes I think it's kind of like poetry. You can take it all apart, but then you can't
it
really
loses
put
its
it.
Essence.
Yeah, it's like, what does it mean? And so I think we've really done that to food and taken the poetry out of food and the beauty out of food.
And the nutrition out of it.
Exactly. We have. Even though we don't still think of that in that way, but it's true because we just break it to bits. And on the other side, we don't want to think about it. We don't want to value it, and we don't value it. There is so much waste because we've got this plethora of food of all different types, and there's so much of it just going away. Mm. Whereas when it's precious, like we do see that. I mean, not that we don't have any waste in our classes because we have some, but you see children valuing what they've made. And that's really wonderful. Or can I take some home to my grandma?
Or we'll have a half a cup of fresh tomato sauce left over, and every kid gets a teaspoon extra, you know, because they just want to eat it up. So
right.
Yes.
Now, do you ever have any public programs for our listeners, for example?
Well, we did our first ever public event last fall, the Harvest Brunch, and that was actually the brainchild of our super chefs. They wanted to do something that would allow them to work with the kids in a public way and also bring some attention to the program, you know.
Raise some money.
It was our first ever fundraiser. So we were a little nervous, but it went wonderfully. What we did was, it was at Salazar Elementary School, which is over on Osage, and we were able to use their cafeteria. So we, the chefs made the food, and we had 7 chefs participating, and these were, you know, local, well-known chefs, and it was, what was so fun about it, though, is so if you can imagine these, you know, world-class chefs in the school cafeteria, and we put them behind the line like the lunch ladies in the cafeteria, so we had, you know, and the guests were using cafeteria trays. We wanted to make it a real school.
We dressed it up a bit,
yeah,
though. We
yeah.
had nice round tables with white tablecloths and then colorful oilcloth on top of that. But
it was just such a hoot when we told the guests that this is how we were going to do this. You're going to get a cafeteria chair. You're going to walk through the lunch line. You're going to get to visit with all these chefs. And, you know, there was James Campbell Caruso, you know, and Martine.
From La Boca.
Yeah. And, mm-hmm. You know, who else do we have? Johnny Bollertson.
Kim Mueller. Kim made a wonderful lamb stew.
Fernando Alea. They were having so much fun.
And Jaime Terrazas.
Oh, that's
who's
right.
Who's a parent.
And at Geronimo. Mm-hmm. So the people were just giddy. It was so much fun to watch them have this experience of walking through the lunch line. And we had, lots of things donated.
Locally grown greens.
Yeah, wonderful experience.
It was really a positive experience for everybody.
Do you think you'll do it again?
We are. We afterwards. It was an awful lot of work, and we didn't realize how much work it would be, sort of naively. But yeah, I think we're going to make it an annual event now. So that is one place where we could probably use volunteers. And that is, I think we're going to probably shoot for the last Sunday of October, unless it's Halloween, into the future. That'll be our annual event. And as the number of chefs grow with our Super Chefs program, I think the event will probably grow as well.
And we had students involved.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
From Salazar, who passed hors d'oeuvres at the beginning and just helped in various ways during the event. They also, several of them spoke about what cooking with kids means to them. And it was really fun.
Oh, it was so cute. These were 5th and 6th graders. We needed older kids. And it was a big deal for them to help. And they wore their black bottoms and white tops. And they walked around all, you know, with their little appetizer trays. And they had so much fun. And it was just, you know, it was just a really neat experience for everybody. And I think the guests enjoyed themselves, too. The food was fantastic. It was a really great event. And it, again, bringing together all sorts of different members of this community of ours. It was really wonderful.
Lynn Walters is the founder and executive director of Cooking with Kids. Anna Farrier is the community liaison. They are at cookingwithkids.net. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Mary Charlotte.
Mary Charlotte. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org. Thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes, and you can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. My email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, jazz.